Welcome, everybody. It is the day after Shavuot, so the reading of we read yesterday the beautiful Megillah of Megillat Ruth, and so much to discuss, but there's a topic that's relevant that I got a new angle, and I want to thank Rabbi Eli Feder. Actually, he taught a couple of fellowship or senior fellowship shears in the past, if I recall, back in the day. He gave a shear, which you get on Spotify, called Ruth and the Six Barleys. For the different metrics. So he brought up a couple of interesting points that I'm now expanding into another shear, because he brought up a number of interesting of Rashi's that I think I want to share with you guys. And the topic is Ruth, Sniut, and seduction. You know, modesty and seduction. Okay, so let's go to the videotape. This is an interesting company. It's called Revealing Modesty. So we're going to learn all about it. We'll share a screen.
Revealing Modesty is a company that I started to help people find their own style. And our specific niche is to help people find their style within the laws of sneas or modesty. It's really important for me to understand what works for you. It's not about me. It's not about what looks good on me. It's not about how I want to project myself. It's about you. And the client is really the most important element of this whole business. After the initial consultation, then we look at the three S's. We look at silhouette. That's your body type. And we talk about some of the clothes that most flatter that body type. We look at style. Are your clothes reflecting who you are now, who you want to be, and what your message is? And we also talk about statement. Who are you and what are you saying with your clothing? What would you like to say? The next step that we do is a closet analysis. We'll look at all of the clothing pieces that you have, what works, what doesn't work, what could be updated. We then proceed with a needs analysis where we figure out what do you need for the future? How do you use what you have and put in the things that you now need? After that, we use a lot of unique different types of vendors that people may never have seen before. Stores, consignment stores, vintage, whatever suits that client's needs. We go and we pull the clothes ahead of time so that you don't have to do it on one foot. We are able to show the client. One of the things that's most important to me is education. We have chosen this skirt over that skirt based on what you need and why it would work for you. We offer a full variety of services, consultation about shaitels, makeup, accessories, and we finish the whole product and we revisit it. We can revisit things at any point if you find yourself making a simcha, a special occasion. So then we build with the information we have. There are clients that drop in just for that part. And recently I'm working on a 10-part style evolution with someone, which you'll be able to see on our blog soon. We started from the beginning. We started to talk about style, and it's really amazing to watch this person look into the mirror and just come into their own. As a woman, there's a lot of thought process that perhaps we should be in the background. But really, we're not in the background. We're in the everyday world with our children, with our families. And stepping into the light allows us to bring the light into our families and into wherever our situation is, be it at work, interacting with the community, interacting with friends, interacting even with ourselves. And I saw something recently that I found so interesting. I do a lot of people watching. That's what I do for a living. So I kind of can, I would have been a great spy because I spent a lot of my time just sitting and watching and understanding and trying to figure out what message is being given in any communication and appearance. And I was sitting in the lobby and I saw this woman walking through the lobby, amazing. All eyes were on her. And then I thought to myself, that's very interesting. She is completely covered. They're not looking at the people that are not covered. They're not looking at the young girls. They were looking at a mature woman who was beautifully dressed. And I thought to myself, what is it? Why are people connecting with her? And I think the reason that people were connecting with her, she was completely stepping into her own light, into her own space, and feeling great about herself. And that's the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is not to step into light so that everybody's attracted to you based on externals. The ultimate goal is to bring the light forward of who you are and to step into it.
Okay. All right. Let's get into it. Okay, so a couple questions here. What is the typical association with a modestly dressed woman? What are associations? Typically. Not always, typically. Are there any associations?
Religion.
Or one at a time. Okay, go ahead. Shana, then Remy.
I was going to ask, are we speaking within Judaism, or are we speaking about seeing somebody modestly dressed in general?
Either one. We're just opening up the con. We're just working up to explore the area.
So I would say that that she's probably pretty conservative, or she could be in a position or a role where she can't be or shouldn't be showing a whole lot of skin.
So what's the, so you're saying that she's dressing modestly because typically of her position of authority, essentially.
Right. So the first person that comes to mind when thinking about this is somebody like Kate Middleton.
Right. So she's dressed very sneezily because she's a princess.
Yes.
And she represents the royal family. Okay, good. What else? Now let's shift it into the world of Jewish modestly dressed women. What are oftentimes associations? Everybody's so quiet. I know you guys got opinions on this. Everybody's so shy. Rami, you had something to say?
Sorry, I'm just like coming home from the hospital, so I apologize. I'm like in and out. I mean, typically, like when I see someone who's modestly dressed, just even on the street, like I think that there might be some sort of like religious affiliation, whether it's Jewish or not. And I think like within the Jewish world, when I see someone religious, there's like an inner dignity, a respect for self that I notice compared to when I see a lot of people in the secular world dressed like with the short shorts and half the stomach showing and all that kind of thing. That's what I think of.
Okay. So personal dignity, a sense of, you know, that's okay. Now, oftentimes, I'm going to be like the, I guess I'll push the question a little more. How does the word stylish and modestly dressed, do those generally go in the same sentence? You know, more often than not. And it's not intrinsically a contradiction, but generally, yes, or I mean, would you say that things which are thematic?
It depends, I think, on the, if you're speaking Jewishly, I think it depends on the woman and it depends on the community.
Okay.
For example, like even at my own shul, I guess during Pesach, there were people from a different town that were here. And there was a noticeable difference in the way they dress compared to the way my community dresses, even amongst people of the same age. Whereas one community, the dresses may have been a little bit looser or a little bit flowier. The other community, the dresses were a little bit tighter. The colors were a little bit louder, just different in that regard.
Right. Okay. So there is definitely a distinction of different community standards, what are the trends? But frequently, one of the bad raps that people give to modestly dressed women is like the word frumpiness or lack of style or boring. She's dressed boringly, right? That's agreement from Shane here because nobody can see you nod. So Julie, what says you, Julie? Any other?
I think it's the dress and it's just, I guess, the way sometimes people perceive observant women to be like subservient when it's like the complete opposite is really the truth.
Right. So they might say it looks like they're covering up for the men. So that has that vibe going on. Okay. So then we have this Aviva Bamberger. She has a concierge service available. None of that sounded cheap. I just wanted to just let you know that that was not did not sound like an inexpensive service. Just for those that didn't catch that. But what problem is she solving? She's trying to thread the needle, no pun intended. What is she trying to do?
She's trying to help people look good. I mean, it's nice to have something. So
if I want to look good, so go down. Every higher end clothes company will have shopping consultants. You can go to Saks Fifth Avenue. All these companies. They will have that for you. So what's the difference? Why do you got to go over down to Aviva? What, she has a specific, very specific niche.
Well, I think she was saying it's not just clothes she's offering. She's offering recommendations on wigs and other stuff. That
right, so it's all it's so it's clothing and all clothing, makeup, and all the accessories. Okay, but you can get that in. What is she offering that you can't get at Lord & Taylor Special Services, which they do offer that? Shayna.
I'll let Julie go because I.
Yeah, Julie.
I was going to say, women can, if she's a from woman, then women can identify with her. And sometimes it's easier to go shopping from someone who understands your perspective.
That's for sure true. But she as a graduate of FIT is bringing a specific set of skills. She's offering a specific set of skills, which is a rare combination. Anybody, Harry, to Shayna, again, weigh in.
I was going to say she's helping people look their best while helping them feel their best and feel like their true selves. So that the people that the way they see themselves, at least on the inside, is coming across on the outside as well. So it's,
you all, could say, but all within the guidelines of what we call tzniut, modesty in general. So she's able to. Where you don't feel like your femininity is being, let's call it, squelched or being suppressed, while simultaneously she'll find the clothing based upon your silhouette, your style and statement. See, I'm learning all the right words here. Your silhouette, style, and statement to make the message in your how you present yourself all being as a dressing as a modest person, but yet simultaneously sharing your, communicating your sort of like a personal dignity, but in an attractive way. Okay, so attractive way, but not in a. What's the challenge here? You're being attractive, while not being what? I need another word. What's the opposite? Attractive yet not. Provocative, not being like, not being, what's another word?
Is it overtly sexual in a way or
right.
Overtly sexy?
Right. Not being attractive without being sexy. Okay. Sexy being clearly communicating, the person's sexual. That putting your sexual identity as being front and center would be the definition of sexy. Okay. As being the main dominant theme of your personal dress statement. As I'm learning the language here. So that's it. All right. So that's that now. So these services that she's providing is able for a person to be sniut while simultaneously be attractive, be able to express their personal dignity, their statement, their identity in a way which is complimentary to them. They don't feel like they are looking like a loser. You know what I'm saying? So that's why she has special vendors and she knows what looks good and she's going to help you put yourself together. You're going to really be awesome. Okay. So that's not an easy test. The very fact that you need to have a specially trained person to really do that well shows that's not a very easy goal to accomplish. Apparently, it's oftentimes you're feeling modesty, you know, and not feeling as attractive as you feel that you could be. Okay. All right. Next question. Does sniyut apply to men? We got a couple of guys here. What do you say? Does sniyut apply to men?
Yes, 100%.
Why? They don't have to wear a dress. They don't have to cover up their, they don't necessarily have to do that. They don't have the same identical requirements.
Because sneas is not just about how you dress. It's also about how you act, how you behave, how you speak. It's much broader and much more encompassing.
Correct. Well, there are two concepts that we have to sneas, by the way, it's not essentially about what you wear. That's actually secondary. There are two concepts that get conflated into each other. There's being modest, which basically means that as I think we've learned in going back to some of the old Parsha class, I know we're up to year six, so I forgive you, don't remember all 300 classes on the tip of your fingertips. But one of the classes we did on sniyut back in the day was the Talmud's example of sniyut. It had nothing to do with wearing clothes. It had to do like this, how you do a mitzvah. The example was that the case was that you had given money to a poor couple, bride and groom, so they can get married, help them get married and set up their home. And you were sneezed that you didn't let anybody know about it. You didn't brag. Hey, you know what? Sam and Barbara, their wedding? Yeah, I took care of that. I made that happen. Didn't need a little extra help. I covered it. I covered the action. They were short a couple of dollars. You know what I mean? No biggie. There was no using that as an opportunity to promote your brand. Sneas is about keeping your brand. Your brand is about a personal dignity, about being a person who is not interested, about your values, not about showing off your financial or other gifts you may have, beauty or money, or beauty, money, or power being the throb. So therefore, sneas is essentially not about clothing. What people can think, there's another term called erva. What is erva? To the Torah.
Isn't that nakedness?
Nakedness. Erva basically means is that there are parts of our bodies, male, there are private parts of our bodies. So here's the phenomena. You can be tz'ut, but reveal your erva. But you can cover your erva, but not be sniyut. Let me explain. So we're going to detangle this thing. So if you get one concept tonight and you get these two things, you're ahead of so many Jews. This is like a classic mix up. For example, you have a husband and wife. They are now alone. It is sniyus for them to be romantic with each other. And that could be that they are completely naked. And that is a mitzvah. Okay? So their erva is uncovered, each other. But they're sneas because they're not live streaming this phenomena. You know, the door is shut, the door is locked. That's it. Okay? Clear? So a person to show their erva to their husband or wife is appropriately and is encouraged at the right time and place, okay? So they're sneas, but they're not showing their erva. Versus a person is covering their erva, they're completely covered from head to toe, as people like say, but they're not sneas. So for the guy, he's bragging about his tremendous money and the wealth that they have, or talking about which amazing luxury hotels and vacation they want. That's not sneas. You know what I mean? They're blinding you with the light of their very flashy Rolex. That's not sneas. Okay? They're covered. The guy's wearing a suit. Or the woman, she's dressed in a skirt and a top, but it's so tight, not leaving a whole lot of imagination. It's very provocative. Her hair was covered, but it's still not sneas. Do you understand those two concepts? So we have erva on one end, and we got sniyut on the other. Those are two ideas that are woven together, but they're not the same thing. People view, they collapse those two ideas into one, and they view one sneakers is basically on women, and they got to cover up. That's it. No. Therefore, that gets that number. Therefore, they feel that guys are off the hook, number one. Consequence, number one, all guys are off the hook, number one. And number two is that it then becomes a very technicality. Well, I was covered. So look, I mean, if so meanwhile, you could wear spandex. That would also, with, a spandex suit, that would not be sneeze because you're not leaving a whole lot. You know, definitely the dress is provocative. Now, also it has to do with time and place. Where are you? Now, again, to go skiing in a dress, it could be not sneeze because your dress might fly up. Okay, for example. So that's not sneeze. So you're right. So these are two concepts. So conversely, a guy who takes off his shirt because he's got a great six pack and he's walking down the street on a hot summer day, that's not sneeze. But there's not technically an error. There's no erva because he didn't take off his pants. So because the guy's erva is far smaller, territory is far smaller than the woman's erva territory. So he would be technically not revealing any erva, but he would not be sneeze. Do you understand that? Conversely, a girl is all covered up, but she's dressing in a sexy, provocative manner. It's not, even though she's technically covered up, but it's either very tight or whatever. It's very revealing or provocative, depending on the look. That's not, it's not erva, but it's not sneeze. So do you understand those two concepts? Those things that most people confuse. So I want to make sure that before we move on, we remove that confusion. Is everybody cool with that? We're good? Clear? All right, we move on. Now let's jump into one of the most, I don't know if you were, we read it yesterday, and it was key moment in the entire Megillah. It came down to this. So as you all know, we have Ruth, who is Naomi's daughter-in-law. She converts, she goes back with her to Beit Lechem. They are destitute. She goes out and gathers the leket, the fallen grain, stalks of grain in Boaz's field. Okay, so that, let's pick her up. So let's, who would like to read? Eitan, can you read? Are you available to read? Okay, who's in a good position to read? We got Scott. All right, Scott, read it out, baby.
You need to share the screen.
And it would be helpful for me to share the screen.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah. Take it away.
Well, 1 second. Just getting everything ready. Naomi had a relative of her husband, a mighty man of wealth from the family
Elimelech,
and his name was Boaz. But the Moabite said to Naomi.
Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi,
please let me go to the field, and I will glean among the ears of grain. Behind him, in those eyes, I will find favor. And she said, go to my daughter.
So the scene here, this is chapter 2. Basically, they just show up to town, and since all the men in their life are dead, they got no means of obvious support. So Ruth, depending on your, basically says, we're going to starve. So she asks her mother-in-law permission. Can I go out to the field to gather some stuff? Okay. And she said,
go, my daughter. She went and she came and gleaned in the field behind the reapers. By chance, she happened upon the portion of the field belonging to Boaz from the family Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Beit Lechem, and he said to the reapers, may Hashem be with you. And they said to him, may Hashem bless you. Boaz said, his servant who was set over set over the reapers in the field. To whom is this young woman? The servant who was set over the reapers answered and said, she is a Moabite young woman who returned with Naomi from the fields of Moab. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the reapers. And she stood from the morning until now. Sitting in the house only a little, Boaz said to Ruth, listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field and do not pass from here. You shall stay here close to my maidens. Keep your eyes on the field in which they reap and walk behind them. I am commanding the servants not to bother you. If you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the servants have drawn. She fell on her face and bowed to the ground and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you acknowledge me when I am a foreigner?
Excellent. Okay, so we have, so basically she goes out to gather the sheaves. She happens to go to Boaz's field. She starts gathering and Boaz shows up. He's talking to his servants, his workers. May Hashem be with you. May Hashem bless you. Okay, very warm. All right. And they said, and then he says, to whom is this young woman? This woman is sticking out. There's a Rashi on that. Shana read B'vakasha, the Rashi.
To whom does this maiden belong? Was it the practice of Boaz to inquire about women? Rather, because he saw her modest and wise behavior, he was curious about her. He observed that two ears she would glean, but three she would not glean. And she would glean the standing ears while standing, and the lying ones while sitting, in order to avoid bending over.
Okay, so basically, Boaz, Rashi picks up, not that guy, that Boaz was the kind of guy, like a creepy kind of guy. Hey, who's that lady? That would be, that's not, in the eyes of the Talmud and the Midrashim, Boaz is viewed as a communal leader of Beit Lachem, as being a very developed person. In fact, he's even associated, according to some, as being one of the shoftim, one of the judges who ruled the Jewish people. And he's associated with a guy named Ibtzan. Ibtzan was the name of the various judges. Before there were kings, before there was King Saul, Shaul, it was run, the place were judged by judge, the last judge being Shmuel, the last judge, okay? So a couple of generations before that, a guy named Ibtzan. And they're saying that's like Boaz. So Boaz caught two uniquenesses about this woman, that she's a poor person, obviously, because she's collecting in the field. What were two midot, two qualities that caught his eye? Shana?
That he was modest, or she was modest and wise. Mostly that she would, I'm not sure what it means when the ears are standing.
When the harvesters, you know, swing the sickle, okay. So, and they gather the stuff. If the rule is that if one or two core pieces of standing grain fall and they don't gather it, that becomes leket. And that's available only for the poor, and the owner and his staff cannot regather it. Okay, but if there are three that are fell away, the owner is allowed to regather that. So basically, what he noticed that if there were two that were still standing up somewhat, and she could do it without bending down, she would pick it up. But if they fell to the ground, she would sit down then pick it up. Why does she sit down to pick it up?
It's modest behavior. Depending on which way somebody would bend over, either their tush is going to be sticking out in the air, or if she's wearing a dress or a skirt, she could inadvertently flash someone the other if she goes to squat the other way.
Right. So basically, she was very continent. Even though that poor people are on harvest time are going to feel very anxious, like we got to, you know, because there are other people there, so they want to do what? Grab all the stuff. So when you're in a grabbing your, you know, grabbing food for your, for to support yourself, people are not A, going to be careful about the halacha. Oh, I'm only going to click the two, not the three. And I'm not going to be so conscious about being respectful in my posture, not to, as you said, to bend down and give people, you know, an inappropriate look, or, you know, so she was very conscientious, even though there's a lot of stress, and a poor person might just be on the stress of the moment, just basically say, I'm just going to grab all the grain I can. And, you know, we'll deal with that. You know, you're in a very harried and stressed situation. So that the fact that she comport herself in such a dignified and thoughtful manner in that situation, which is very stressful, stuck out. Now, playing shot is that she looked different than everybody else because she was from Moab. So that's one thing. But also when she when Boaz sees her, he's very nice to her. And what's her reaction to that? When he says, don't worry, you can have water, you can keep on gleaning here, don't go to another place. He's very nice to her. And she says, why have I found favor in your eyes to acknowledge me that I'm a foreigner? You know what I mean? So why, you know, what's my, and then he tells her, because you've been so grateful, helpful to my relative, my Naomi. You know what I'm saying? So I want to show my hakara tatov. Okay, I want to run and show my gratitude. Okay, so that's scene one. So we have two qualities about Ruth that was identified by Boaz. Number one, she is wise. Number two, she is modest. She is tznuah. She is tznias, and she's not bending down in a way which is provocative, even under a stressful circumstance. Apparently, the other women would maybe not as careful as she was. Okay, so she really was distinct in her comportment. Okay, now let's keep on going. Now let's get to that. Now then we have the scene. All right, Shada, keep us reading here.
Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "Shall I not seek repose for you so that it will be well with you? Now is it not Boaz, our relative, with whose maidens you were? Behold, he is winnowing barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash, anoint, and put on your garments, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he finishes eating and drinking. When he lies down, take note of the place where he lies, and you shall come and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what you shall do." She said to her, "All that you say to me, I shall do." She went down to the threshing floor and did all that her mother-in-law commanded her. Boaz ate and drank and was in good spirits, and he went to lie at the edge of the pile of grain. She came secretly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, the man trembled and twisted around, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she said, "I am Ruth, your handmaid. May you spread the corner of your garment over your handmaid, for you are a redeemer." He said, "Blessed are you to Hashem, my daughter. This last kindness is better than the first, that you have not gone after the young men, be they poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not be afraid. All that you say, I shall do for you. For all that pass by the gate of my people, know that you are a woman of valor. Now, though it is true that I am a redeemer, there is a redeemer who is closer than I. Stay the night, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem. But if he does not want to redeem you, as God lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning." She lay at his feet until the morning, and she rose before one could recognize his fellow. He said, "Let it be known that the woman came to the threshing, or let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." He said, "Bring the shawl that is upon you and hold it." She held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and placed it upon her. He came to the city. She came to her mother-in-law. She said, "Who are you, my daughter?" She told her all that the man had done for her. She said, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley, for he said, 'Do not come empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" She said, "Wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter will fall, for the man will not rest, but will conclude the matter today."
Okay, great. So what was unusual about Naomi? What did Naomi want for Ruth? What did Naomi want for Ruth?
She wanted a husband for her.
Yeah, she wanted her to be, in other words, her son, Chilion, died. And now this woman's a widow. And she's a young widow. And she wants her to be happy. Okay? Now, two, what was Naomi's plan for Ruth? What was the plan?
Was she trying to, like, ask what he wanted in return for all this kindness and food?
If that's the case, why did they have to do it in the middle of the night? Why don't he's going to see her? She's going to see him in the morning when she goes to the field to gather the grain. Let her make an appointment during the day. Why is she stealthily now? And how is she dressed, by the way? Don't forget the dress. How is she dressed?
She's washed and anointed and wearing her garments.
She's dressed nicely.
What kind of garments? Her work garments?
It doesn't say, but most likely not.
Right. She's dressed up nicely. She looks very nice right now. She's dressed for going to a simcha. You know what I mean? She looks nice. And yet she's going into the guy's, granary in the middle of the night.
She just wants to be prepared in case they run into each other.
No, she's trying to sneak up to him. Naomi says he's going to be eating and drinking, and then he's going to sleep in his. Now, why is Boaz sleeping on his pile of grain in the granary? Let's start with the basic facts here.
He's waiting for Ruth.
How can he know that Ruth is coming? Why would he assume that some woman is going to come to meet with him in the middle of the night? You know what I mean?
He doesn't know. I think he's just hoping.
So is that like, but he has this guy. Like,
I'm just going to post up here and wait.
Is she a prostitute?
Going to steal?
Okay, all right, there you go. So Julie's correct. So the plain reading is that this is after the harvest time. His granary is filled with tons of grain. What if you have to sit there to guard it? That means you're worried that people are going to come steal it. So he's there guarding all of his grain after the harvest, and that's why he's out there. It's far away from the city. He's sleeping. Why is he sleeping on his grain? So if anybody comes in to sneak and get it, he'll be ready to contend with them.
Right.
Okay. What did Naomi want? What did Naomi want Ruth to do or accomplish with this meeting, the special event? This midnight encounter.
She wanted Boaz to know that he can trust her.
She wanted Boaz to know that. Well, I didn't catch that.
That he can trust her. That not only is she being nice to another woman who is elderly, but that she's also being respectful of the men. She didn't do anything to him other than uncover his feet. She made a sign to him that here, look, I could have done anything, but look, I'm just sitting here waiting for you to wake up.
what signal or what message is she hoping or want for him to pick up? What does he want her? What does she want him to do? And it's very bold. She's asking for something very bold here. I'm going to share the screen again.
Basically waiting for a proposal.
Yes. She's not waiting for a proposal. She's basically asking him to marry him in a very not that. She say, you are the redeemer. So what does a redeemer do? We learn in Parshas Bahar that if you are destitute, the last asset you have is your ancestral land. So Naomi has all the land of Elimelech, Mahlon, and Chilion, and she wants him to keep it in the family by buying it and giving her and her mother-in-law the money, so then they will now no longer be poor. step one. And only as an additional element of that, she wants her to, wants him to put, you know, we call put, what's it, put your corner of your, put your garment over your handmaid for your redeemer. Putting your garment over thing is really what is, and I, in addition to being a redeemer, I want you to marry me. So, which ultimately it does happen.
Oh, that's the whole, like that whole Sephardic custom at the chuppah where the groom can take his tallit and cover the bride at the same time.
Right. So that it's really, yes, it's related to that. That's, it's a part of the, it represents being underneath the same, like that's a kind of chuppah, being underneath sort of the same tallit or underneath the chuppah, which is, you know, you're like, it's like a symbolic gesture of you're underneath the same household. So basically, it's like you go on the first date and the person says, would you like to get married? All right. That's a little bold and gutsy. Now, what could happen in that situation?
They say no.
They could say no. And how will that person feel?
Terrible.
Massively crashing and burning. Massive rejection. Now, well, why is she dressing up so nicely? And what would you imagine would happen in the middle of the night when nobody's around with a young woman all dressed up with an older man in the granary? What could this be? I got a smile out of Shayna, so I know that she knows. What could this be?
She could be, well, the dressing up would be like how a woman would dress for her first date, that they want to put their best foot forward.
Exactly. Good. Check.
And then in, we'll say in some communities, that the woman wants the first date, if it's going well, to culminate in someone's bed. And so in, that's almost like, or that is what she, what could be interpreted.
Exactly. So then, so notice how he sort of, now, what's radical about it? Now, let's say Ruth is like 30 years old, round, okay? It's hard to, we don't give an age. And it looks like Boaz is much older, like maybe twice as old, maybe 60, something plus. He's not. So he says, blessed are you to Hashem, my daughter. This last kind is better than the first, that you are not gone after the younger men, be they poor or rich. Or what Naomi should have said to Ruth, I want you to get a husband, remarry. And she should have got somebody who's more age appropriate for her, not somebody Boaz's age, but get somebody. In other words, why is she putting these things together? Step one, Boaz should be the redeemer and help the family get out of poverty. Step one. Step two, Naomi should have got a shidduch, which was appropriate, age appropriate for Ruth. That would have been the, what you would imagine the normal thing. Here, she put these things together. Now, one of the ideas from the Forsham is basically that what Ruth is doing, she is, by him buying the ancestral land, A, and B, him marrying her, she is keeping the name of that whole family alive, okay? So it's sort of like a Yibum, sort of like a that Levirate marriage where you have a man is married, he dies without children, so the younger brother marries that woman and establishes his household, so his name will not go, will not disappear. It's like a, it's a kind of Yibum. Now, Boaz is not Mahlon Chilion's brother, but he's part of the, he's like a cousin, he's related. So that's one idea. Second idea is that Boaz, if he's the great man, so therefore she wanted him to be connected to the great Shofate. It'll be good for her insofar as his perfection, you know, her, she's married a great Jewish man, a great Jewish leader. That would be good for her to be somebody with great midos. Now, she elected to do this. That's why she said, all right, I'm going to do it. She could have said, heck no, I ain't marrying that old dude. We'll go to Boaz and ask him to, you know, to redeem the land, which he, which is an act of tzedakah, that's A, and I'm going to go find my, I'm going to find a guy my age. I'm going to go to MJE. I'm going to, you know, I'm, that's it. I'm going to the, the Gem Saloon. They're having an event a couple of Mondays from now. That's what I'm going to do. I'm not marrying Boaz. But she did it. Now, the wild Rashi. We go on to the Rashi. This goes to the seduction component. All right, keep it going, Shayna.
So she went down to the threshing floor, and she did. She, Naomi, said to her, "Bathe and scent yourself. Dress yourself in the finest garb, and afterwards, and go down to the threshing floor." But she, Ruth, did not do so. But instead, she said, "If I go down when I am dressed up, whoever meets me or sees me will think that I am a harlot." She therefore first went down to the threshing floor and afterwards adorned herself as her mother-in-law had instructed.
So why did, so according to this, Rashi picks up on the language, the difference between Naomi's instruction and what she did. She did take the shower. She did put on the makeup. She put her clothes in the bag, and she didn't change into her clothes and her jewelry until she got to the granary, because if she's walking down the street, and she's all super decked out, walking in the middle of the night, it only means one thing: she's being paid to have a sexual encounter with somebody, and she's the person who cares about tzniut. The woman from the previous Rashi, who, if there's cut sheaves of barley or grain that fell to the ground, that she's bending, lying on the, she's sitting down to pick it up. She's extra careful to be tzniut. She doesn't want to be perceived as being a harlot, a prostitute. But yet again, she's walking into, but on the other hand, she's walking into the granary dressed to kill and then sleeping at its feet. I wouldn't call it a seduction, because they don't sleep together. Because you see, very nice, she sleeps at night at his feet. They don't sleep together. The McGill wants it very clear for you to know that he says he's going to work it out. He says, "I can't be a redeemer. There's somebody closer in the, you know, in the relative line. We're going to see." But he says, "No, I'll do it." You know, and in order to show that he don't want to, like, you know, make her feel bad or that not take her seriously, says, day and night, in the morning, he didn't kick her out. If he redeems you, good, let him redeem. But if you don't want to redeem you, as God lives, I'll redeem you. Lie down until morning. So he didn't kick her out. And then bring the shawl. And then he gives her an enormous amount of barley. So to show that he's very serious. We're gonna work this out. You're basically said like this: your mother and you are not going to be living in poverty more. We're going to buy your field, the family fields. You're going to be financially secure. A. B, this unusual request, which is that we're gonna have a get married here. I'll do it if the other guy who's closer, who's up closer on the line of the redemption, won't do it. I'll do it, and we're gonna take care of it tomorrow. And to show you that I'm serious about this, I'm gonna give you a humongous amount of grain to take home so the family will be further supported. So clearly, why did she dress up that way? Why was she dressed with makeup and jewelry and lie down right next to him?
To impress him.
Yes. In what kind of way impress him?
In the hopes that he would find her attractive.
Right. There is a romantic component here. Now, Boaz is, so it is, a, it is, she is functioning in a semi-seductive manner, right? She is being bold. This is not the normal shidduch date. Let me just, if you didn't know about that now, this is not how it's normally done, okay? You don't sneak up to the guy, sleep at his feet, and say, "We want to get married." That's not how it normally goes down, okay? This is very unconventional. This is very unusual. She is sort of shocking him, being very bold in this very unusual circumstance. But this gets to our whole point. This is the main amazing takeaway about Ruth. She was wise. She was sneers. She was bold. She was provocative. And even sometimes she was sexy and seductive. How do we balance all these sometimes seemingly contrary and contradictory values and virtues? How do we understand this woman? How do we explain Bruce?
I would argue that it's not contradictory. Because well, she's super cautious when she's in the fields to like pick things up either standing or sitting, depending on where the ears of grain were. Her behavior shows that that's one of her core values, part of who she is. You see it with how Rashi interpreted how she waited until she was at the granary or the threshing floor before she changed into her dress. You see it. She didn't lie down next to Boaz. She lied at his feet. She didn't come right out and say, "Hey, Boaz," when she's there and he's eating and drinking. She waited till he went to sleep. So everything she does is still within this modest, this mode of tzniut.
Well, when she's lying at his feet and she asks him, "Cover me with your blanket because you're the Redeemer," was that tzniut?
That's making her point known. That's her saying, "Here's why I'm here."
Correct. The answer to the great person, male or female, sometimes you got to be more restrained and sometimes you got to be bold. She was always wise. But how she's going to present herself is going to be based on the circumstance. Okay? Now, many people who are, we call tzniut, like, you know, they're very modest and they're very restrained and they are very careful about in their demeanor, I would argue that is virtuous. They would not be able to turn on a dime and be bold and even seductive when they need to be. You know what I'm saying? This is actually psychologically quite hard. In other words, you could be a person, male or female, who's like a very much a flirty kind of person. Okay, we all know those kind of people. They're flirty. Male guys, female, they're always flirting, constantly flirting. Okay, so for them, if that was a woman, to flirt with Boaz would be not a problem. That would be like normal, you know, that would be a normal thing. And then we have the other kind of person who is very restrained and very cautious and withdrawn and very modest. We have that person. Would they feel comfortable going into the granary in the middle of the night, dressed up to the nines, and then sleeping at his feet, and then asking him, "You are the Redeemer, cover me with your blanket," basically mean marry me. Would they ever be able to do that? Is that something that would that come easily with to them? I would argue no. Big time no. So that's why Ruth is amazing. And I would argue all the heroines of Tanakh have this ability when things get tough. There is Miriam. You know, she's talking to the daughter, the princess of the daughter of Paro, negotiating when, you know, her brother's life is in the line. Very bold. She's a young woman, and she's stepping up to this most powerful woman in the country and negotiating. According to the Midrash, she's telling her father that they should re-get together, back married to her mother. We have the two. We have the maids, the head of the midwife society, Shifra and Pua, basically going up to Paro and lying. So we have Tanakh. You have the women, the great women, when they need to be. They are bold, they are smart, they got game, and they do what they got to do to get the job done. On a general day, you met Ruth? This is a woman with dignity, with intelligence, who is thoughtful. She wants to present herself as being somebody you should take seriously. Okay? Simultaneously, when she had to be seductive and bold and unconventional, she did it, and she did it great. So in the realm of Sneas, so we started our class off with detangling the idea of covering of Erva versus being modest. Those are one things that are oftentimes mixed together. But being modest is even within a larger context, which is, as Shana said, what's your goal and mission? What's the big picture? What was her picture? Her pitch was, I'm a convert. I've joined this family. I want to rebuild this family. My husband, Machlon, it didn't work out. I have an opportunity. And she gave up big time because Boaz was not the young guy. But he was a great man. And she was willing to do it. They have a kid. And ultimately, who is the grandchild of this union? Famously, everybody knows this.
King David.
King David. And he says to her, Ashes Chayil, Rabbi Foreman, who, if you were, Scott was at MJE, one of Rabbi Foreman's great shiurim, makes the following assertion. The famous poem from Mishlei, the last paragraph in Mishlei, which talks about Ashet Chayil, the woman of valor, written by King Solomon. Who did he write it about? His great-grandmother Ruth, who Boaz calls the Ashet Chayil. Everybody knows who the Ashet Chayil. In other words, even though that she was very careful in her, it's an amazing thing, even though she was careful in not to show her erva and to walk with dignity, everybody knew that she was an exceptional person. How did she do this? She had this charisma. This is a great person. Everybody knew about her. She was an amazing person. So it goes back to what was said in the video clip of there's your personal statement of what you're about. You're able to communicate that, which of course transcends clothing in a certain sense. But when she had to, when the situation demanded, was a time to be more bold and out there, she did it. But even Korn Rashi, she didn't do it in a way that would compromise her core value of Sneas, just what was necessary. I got to do something in the granary. I got to get the job done. I'm going to do it. But when I'm walking to the granary, people don't have to see me dressed like this. It doesn't concern anybody. And she goes in there. And of course, it's great credit to Boaz because he even though he's woken up in the middle of the night with this very bizarre visitor, he is very nice to her, and he takes her very seriously. And again, as you know, and we are in the world of the Me Too situation, he's in a position of tremendous power, and she's in a position of tremendous vulnerability. And what did he not, and she is a younger woman, what did he not do?
Take advantage of her? Take advantage of the situation?
Talking about how much temptation is that? A beautiful woman dressed nicely is literally sliding into your bed. Hello, come on. Would we fault Boaz? But Boaz wasn't a regular guy. That, against, I would argue, would support the contention that Boaz was a shofet. He was a leader of the Jewish people, a judge, an exceptional person. And that was a person who he's talking about her virtues. He's not talking about, you look amazing tonight. He's not commenting about her physicality. He's going right to her character. So she's amazing, and he's amazing, and they are the people who, the two strands that make the tapestry that ultimately was King David. So that's really the mark of that seduction and sniut does not contradict them. It depends on the circumstance. It's a mitzvah for the husband and wife to be attracted to each other. In fact, I'll tell you some interesting halachot. Number one, the first of marriage, the bride is allowed to wash her face, according to the Mishnah, or she should look nice. She should not be just forming the marriage, even though that, and generally one of the five restrictions is, you're not to do any bathing, but the bride is allowed to bathe. A There's certain other leniencies when it comes to mourning. If the bride is in mourning, she has certain leniencies so that she should look good, because looking good, being attracted to one another, is very important in the relationship. It plays a very important role, and the fact that they're appealing to each other is very important. So that, and there are certain halachic dispensations that are granted in order to facilitate that. So to be appealing to your spouse is a very important virtue. And, you're going on a date. If you're going to be cold and withdrawn, and you should be loose and schmoozing and, flirting within reason, not ridiculous. I can't tell you an exact halachic thing, but you got to communicate some interest out there. It cannot be a cold corporate interview. It ain't going to work. You got to show a little interest. So that's the right place and time. Oh, but just going to a bar on a random thing and just talking to somebody of the opposite gender, making, and being flirty because it makes you feel good, that's wrong. That's not sneas. It's all context-driven, motivation-driven, circumstance-driven. What's the larger mission? And here you have this amazing example of one person doing something which is so radical out there, but she pulls it off in a very balanced, thoughtful way. And that's why she is our role model. What I'm trying to share to you is, she's not just a role model for women. She's equally a role model to men. You know what I'm saying? She's, if I could be a fraction of as developed as Ruth Samoa, that would be an amazing, that would be a big victory. So, this is an amazing person. So we come to the Megillah once a year, come on Shavuos, and she identifies the ultimate convert, the person who comes to Torah. Nobody forcing her. She does it because she wants to do it, and that's the right attitude, and she goes very, very far. How far? She is ultimately the grandmother of the Mashiach. David HaMelech is the Mashiach of the Jewish people. She's amazing, and she can live in, and she could just go from one, have tremendous flexibility. It's just an amazing, it's amazing to appreciate that, and a great person. I just wanted to share with you, and I want to thank Rabbi Fader, who, this was a little part of his share. He dealt with a different topic, but he brought up some of these chazal, and it was just a great point that I felt I wanted to share with you guys, because most people look down at sneas as, oh, sneas, that's the repression, or that's either sexual repression or suppression of women. It could not be further from the truth. It's about being a dignified person who is to be taken very seriously for what they have to say and what they have to think, and well, simultaneously, at the right time, place, can act differently as the situation demands, like Ruth. It's not a one. It's not just the person is that 24/7. It's there's a time and place for everything, and you could be sneas and not and show erva. You could not show erva and not be sneas. Those we talked about, those dichotomies, and then we could talk about how a person could be sneas and sneas. And the next moment be sultry and back to sneas in a short amount of time and be wildly successful. So I just want to, any questions about that? All right. So I wish you all the best. A wonderful evening, and see some of you get back at MG tomorrow night, and all the best.
Thank you. Thank you.
Keep